What's up, baby? It's Bretzky, and I'm here to tell you that SpinQuest.com is giving out free sweeps coins. All you gotta do is purchase a $10 coin pack, and guess what? They're gonna give you the coins from a $30 coin pack. That lets you play all your favorite games like Blackjack, Wanted, Dead or Wild, and we're talking real cash prizes, baby. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
True Crimers, welcome to Break the Case. I'm your host. I'm Jen Coffendaffer. Thank you so much. I appreciate you all staying an extra half an hour, or hopefully you got my message and coming in a half an hour late. I had an unexpected interview this morning that I wasn't really expecting, but it was on a really important case. So I took the call and finished up with that and started getting ready for this interview. In particular, I just like to make sure I have some graphics for you and things like that. So we're going to talk about Savannah Guthrie. I recently did a poll on Twitter. And on Twitter, I wanted to know how many people still believe that the Guthrie family was involved. And if they did, who in the Guthrie family? And so I put up, I believe, three options plus another option saying that they weren't involved. So my number one option, or one of the options, it wasn't number one or two or anything, but one of the options was Tommaso. One of them was Tommaso and Annie. One was Savannah. And then the other was not involved. And it ended up being about a 50-50 split. And I tell you what, this was very interesting to me. And of course, we're talking about Nancy Guthrie and her abduction and the fact that she still remains missing, the fact that the case has not been solved. And as Annie Guthrie wrote, they are lying on the embers, only the embers of hope, or words to that degree. She's a poet. We did a whole show on Annie Guthrie. I hope some of you will have a chance to look at that. A lot of preparation, a lot of looking into that. It's really difficult with people like Annie. And even to a degree, Tommaso was very difficult because they aren't public figures. And whenever you're not a public figure, you don't have as much information out there. And again, on Annie, I found a lot of really good information that I hope was helpful to everybody to know and to understand, especially when it comes to any nexus with Nancy Guthrie being abducted. And then same with Tommaso. It's always tough to, I call it proving a negative. It's hard to prove a position that people have when there's no evidence. In other words, if there's a case where there's some evidence of something one way or the other, that's a lot easier to say, okay, this is their evidence. Let's look at it. Let's see if it has legs. Let's see if it's a true, or if it's a legitimate possibility. But in cases where people are accused for no other reason than their family, and there's nothing else that links them to a particular crime, zero, that's always more difficult. So anyway, did a deep dive also on Tommaso. Hopefully you can take a look at that. Tommaso Cioni, who has been Annie's husband for 20 years and caretaker. But today I want to talk about Savannah, because believe it or not, in that poll, so about 50% said, listen, the family's not involved. The other 50% was divided almost equally, being Tommaso being not involved at all, Tommaso and Annie being involved. It was something in the 20s for both of them. And then there was a percentage, believe it or not, of hundreds of people that responded that it was Savannah. And I know that probably catches many of you, because you all are true crimers. I mean, you follow true crime, you understand it. You're not just, it's a hobby in a sense, but it's more than a hobby, I think, to most of the people we have on here. And most of the people that consider themselves true crimers, they really like to do deep dives. They listen to lots of different people. They try to get all avenues and all aspects of a particular case. They really want to understand a case. And so, you know, that's why I appreciate y'all. Somebody said, oh, it was the Bitcoin person. The Bitcoin person said, your audience is so intelligent. I mean, because we, you know, communicated obviously offline after the show. And even before the show, he looked at some shows and wanted to kind of, I think, know what to expect, wanted to make sure he should accept such an invitation. No one wants, and it happened to me once. I mean, I've been on several podcasts and invited, and some of them are extremely small. Some of them were extremely small. When I look back, I know I was on Gavin Fish very, very early on when he just had, I don't even know if he had 10,000 subscribers. I think he had six. But I looked at what he was doing and I said, you know what? This is a person who is legitimately, he doesn't have any background or any law enforcement or anything, but he legitimately likes to look into true crime. And now I think he has over 100,000 subscribers. And I'm happy to say after all this time, you know, we remain friends in the space and appreciate each other's work, which is really nice. And many others. When I look at Judy Ron as an example, when he used to have me on constantly, and sometimes the shows were hours long. I remembered I always say, Ron, I've got 1 hour, and 2.5 hours later, I'd be like, oh my God, we're still on. Nothing negative. We would just run over. And so had me on almost constantly when he had very little following. I think 30,000 maybe compared to where he is now. He's got a huge account now. So it's kind of interesting to see how different people grow and expand in this scene. And then also, it's also been very interesting to watch how people grow and expand when they decide to take a particular vantage point. And unfortunately, I'm not going to name all of those creators, but some obviously latch onto a particular POV because it's very popular in this cult-like following concerning that POV, and then they run with it. That's one of the things that concerns me about this case, and this is the intersection why I tangented a little bit off of that, is I can see there's a huge undercurrent in this case, a huge undercurrent to go after the family. And it continues as we speak. There are I think they're going to get sued. I really think they will get sued. Some of the accounts that continue with this and that put together these huge documentaries that millions of people are watching. When I say documentaries, that they do them documentary style, as opposed to this is a lifestyle, as opposed to shorts that are supposed to be under 1 minute. We do a lot of shorts on this channel that come out at night, where we just try to keep up with different information, mostly on the Nancy Guthrie case, but we do all the other cases that we cover that I'm covering either on X or here, just to give everybody a look-see or just breaking news or interesting news. We did a lot of these shorts that can be 1 to 5 minutes long on Celeste Rivas, but they have a very strong message attached to them. So I hope you guys can watch some of those. They're on YouTube for sure. And then they also, I put several of them out on X too. So hopefully you guys can catch some of those. But my point about all of this is I see creators trying to grow, trying to expand their audiences and get viewership on the backs of blaming innocent family members. That's how I look at it. Believe me, if I could find a kernel of evidence or information, I would let you know about it. I can't, because it doesn't exist. And whether you believe Nanos or not, he says it doesn't exist. And I promise you, having worked on task forces, 28 years in law enforcement, 8 years now in the expert witness realm, where I look at murders and crimes and homicides and testify about them. Of course, I love that because I get thousands of pages, all the body-worn camera, all the information so I can make a true assessment. it's harder here. It's harder when you're not in the war room, you're not on the task force, you're not able to read every ounce of information that exists on this case and other cases, but we're able to see a lot. We're able to see what comes out publicly, and that's a lot because a lot of people have been digging. We're able to look at some of the source information, which again, always caveat source information. But I love it when there's a source and I can backstop it with information, for instance, that's come out of Savannah's mouth or that's come out of Nanos's mouth. In other words, when you have the trifecta of people saying the same thing, it's much more easy to corroborate a source. And that's how you do. That's how you corroborate sources, because anybody can be a source. Anybody can say they're in the know. And if you look, most of these are several steps removed. It's not anybody on that task force. It's not even anybody in Pima County. In most cases, this is going to be somebody removed, somebody retired, somebody, and then that is what's cited as a source. Not that they have inside knowledge, really, but they have some knowledge. And, you know, we'll see. I should look and see how many sources in this case have actually been right. I think it's going to be so far a pretty low number. In other words, if I compare the source information we've gotten and compare it with what has ended up being the truth, really, we'd have to do it at the end of the case, but it'd be kind of interesting to look at that. But I want to concentrate on Savannah because I was really surprised when I saw the poll come out with really anybody believing that she could be involved, that she could be behind this, that she could have been, you know, that she could have paid for somebody to do this. I mean, it's nothing short of shocking to me. It's really nothing short of shocking that people could think it's Savannah. So I want to go a little bit into her background, and then I want to go into why people believe Savannah's involved, because there is a cult out there that believes things like this. I shouldn't call them a cult. It's a following that believes things like that, just like they exist in the Idaho 4 case. It's just really shocking. All right. So Savannah, many of you know, but she's been a journalist a really long time. She has, she started out with local affiliates, and actually I watched a really good show on her where she was interviewed, and basically her first job, which she was so excited about, she gets hired and the station goes under shortly after she was hired. I want to say within weeks or months, just a couple of months as I recall. And it was devastating to her because this is a girl who is beyond success. She's just unbelievable. I should talk about that. So she was accepted and went to Georgetown Law School. Now, I know a lot of people that go to Georgetown because, believe it or not, they have a sailing program. And believe it or not, a lot of people from the U.S. Virgin Islands that graduate with the kids my kids went to school with there, they go to Georgetown and the Ivy Leagues because they're actually considered an islander. You know, so that was one of the reasons when it existed that, and now it doesn't exist, but when they had the whatever they called it. It's not DEI. DEI came in later, and I think that's more occupationally. But when these schools wanted to get people who were minorities, well, they were all white, but they came, they had been in the Virgin Islands for years. And so, and it's not that they weren't smart. They made great grades. Many of them were great sailors, but basically Yale, a lot of them went to Yale and Georgetown. Two went to Georgetown, three went to Yale that I can think of right off the top of my head. So, but she went to Georgetown, very difficult to get into, even if you're an islander, very prominent law school. There was a guy I worked with for many, many years who actually was on my squad. He was new to my squad when I was an older person on the squad. Hi, Jilly. Oh my gosh, my tennis partner's name is Jilly. Hi, Jilly. It's great to have you as a member. Thanks. And I like your tabby cat. Oh, they're not called tabbies. Are they called gray tabbies? I think the orange ones are tabbies. But nevertheless, she got into Georgetown, very difficult school to get into. And I've only known one person, as I said, that I worked with that was an FBI agent. He went to Georgetown Law School, and then he got his doctorate of law. So he had his Juris Doctorate, but then separately, he got a PhD in law from Georgetown. Really smart guy. His first name was Jim. He actually was the ASAC over Tucson for some period of time, which is also interesting. But he and I became very good friends, not only, you know, he and his wife, not only my family, my husband and I, and he and his wife doing stuff together, having dinners together. We just became friends. Great guys, very smart guy, really liked Jim. And it's just a difficult school to go to. And not only did she attend there and graduate there, this was one of the most interesting things I read about her, that when she took her bar exam, she had the number one score on the bar exam when she took it. Now, why does any of this matter? Her accolades, her background. I'm going to circle back to why I'm really emphasizing a lot of this. But I just want to say right off the top, Savannah Guthrie is brilliant academically. She's brilliant in terms of the way she can communicate. She's brilliant as a deep thinker, in my opinion. We're going to get into some of that. She's no dummy. And all these people, and there's a slew of them, that are disparaging her family and calling her sister and brother-in-law and even her a murderer, intimating that they have, and I shouldn't say murderer, we do not know Nancy is deceased. Savannah Guthrie believes she's deceased. She's talked about it. She said she made her peace with God, that God told her. Literally, she says this when she has her interview with Hoda. She says God told her that Nancy was with him. She has definitely accepted that most likely she's dead. So I'm just going to say, and I've said this from the beginning, anyone who goes in to abduct an 84-year-old woman, which most 84-year-old women have health problems, certainly Nancy did, they are just banking on the fact that they aren't going to be kept alive. The question is, can they keep them alive long enough to get paid? In this case, I don't think they were able to do that. So sad. I just pause here because it is so sad that people want to think that Savannah, I'll play this. Savannah has any motive, capability, that anybody has seen anything that would give it an ounce of proof that Savannah is involved in this. And I just can't believe with the $40 million she has, and she's given $500,000, so everybody knows, NCMEC, the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, because she understands the play, if you will, in the media that her family has gotten, that Nancy Guthrie has gotten, and how many other thousands and thousands of children are missing. So she specifically wanted to give it to the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, otherwise known as NCMEC. $500,000 she gave to them. There's no strings attached. Here you go, Nick, for your work with missing kids for the children. And then she put up, of course, $1 million, which I believe it's true she wanted to do as a reward. But law enforcement was drinking from a fire hose and knew that would cause even more that they couldn't have at that time. Quite frankly, it hasn't been fruitful. And I'm doing my next show on why nobody has done the reward. So that'll be the next show. So I don't want to tangent too much on that. But the grief and pain that we have watched Savannah show us with no makeup on, roots grown out, could care less how she looks on television, begging for answers, begging for her mother. How the cult can go after, and I am going to call them a cult now because, well, you know what they are? They're really, and I truly believe this, for the most part. Some of them are actually are very talented. There's this one guy who's, I've talked about it before. I am not here to try to bring down other channels, but I am here to bring down ridiculous notions. I'm a victim's advocate until something earth-shattering breaks, which it's not going to. Tommaso, Annie, Cameron, and Savannah and her husband, they are all absolutely victims, victim families. That's who they are. And so I'm going to continue to advocate for them, and I'm going to continue to advocate for justice, especially when I see people continuing to go after them and call them murderers. And they have been called murderers, not just the abductors, but murderers. So she's smart. And I tell you, if I were those other accounts, I would just stop making those shows. I would just stop it. And it's based on nothing. It's so funny. They actually just use AI and create false scenarios. They have a whole scenario they've created where they have Tommaso come in and go under, go under a polygraph and then, you know, get sweated out by interviews. I mean, it's just made up. It's just complete crap. Just complete crap. I hope. And this is why I say this. We just can't have this. This is a new animal, right? Social media being involved in these big cases. Back in the early days, say the Lindbergh days, yes, you could put stuff in papers. You know, there were local and you know, there were magazines. You could not get away with sitting down in your basement, eating Twinkies, growing out your stubble, whether it's on your legs or on your chin, and just typing away and going after people. You just couldn't get away with that. You can get away with it now because you're anonymous and you have all the time in the world because you're on government assistance. You have nothing else to do other than to target innocent victims. And I'm going to digress here for 1 second, and I hope you guys don't mind. At 3 o'clock in the morning, I got some horrible news, and I'm going to share it because I think many of you will know this case. And I literally, it was horrifying to hear for me. And you're going to know this person. Many of you will know who I'm talking about. I would love a show of hands down below. You can use an emoji. If you're a member, you get to use these amazing emojis that our mods, J15 came up with and did it. Absolutely the most professional job in the business on these cool emojis that you can bring stuff on screen so I can see it right away and know kind of what your thoughts are on this. But in the Sebastian Rogers case, there was an individual named Tony Mathis who also worked on the Caleb Harris case. That's where I first came to know him. I got very close with Caleb Harris's family. And still, they're just a phone call away. I check in on them. Had their whole family on. That case still has not been solved. Caleb Harris, young kid, in his 20s, ended up dead in a, found his body in a sewage treatment facility in pieces. This individual helped with that case. They had a divergence of how they were going to move forward with that case. Tony Mathis was just a buddy of Caleb Harris's dad. They worked together and they were very close friends, and Tony Mathis felt bad, I think, for what his dad was going through and kind of how to navigate. And so offered up as a friend to help in that case. they had a divergence in how the case should be handled. So Tony left, which he should have, because that's up to Caleb Harris and his family, how they wanted that case handled. And a lot of people don't realize this, but Seth Rogers, the father of Sebastian Rogers, and sorry, this is heavy on my heart because I'm going to get to why. Sebastian Rogers his dad, Seth Rogers, again, when his son went missing, trying to make his way through trolls and through law enforcement and through what was happening with his missing son, asked Tony Mathis's help. That's how it went. It wasn't the other way around. I know this firsthand. He and Seth became like brothers. That's a fact. Tony gave up a lot of his personal time, despite some major challenges with his family. Gave up a lot of his personal time. And sick individuals on here, on social media, and on YouTube, with disgusting criminal backgrounds, people that no one should be listening to. No one should give a rat's butt what they have to say, because they are nothing more than criminals. And when they don't have anything juicy in the story, they make it up. And I have examples. And they have a whole little faction of creators that are what I call, they're just hate contenters, drama haters, horrible people that do nothing to advocate, and they do everything to hurt innocent people. And they went after Tony. They gave him horrible names. There was a green screen incident. I don't even know what all that was. I don't care. Never cared. Because I knew that behind the scenes, Tony Mathis was keeping Seth Rogers alive. Because of the loss of his son, Sebastian, who was likely also deceased, and that case never being solved. That has turned a corrections officer into a shell of himself, as he tries to maintain. Tony Mathis is dead. That's what I found out at 3 yesterday morning. And I tell you, he died of a heart attack. And part of the reason I will forever believe was because of everything he suffered when he got involved in that case. Thankfully, he got out of it. I mean, he completely did kind of a cold turkey. I'm out. They're literally going after my job. They're going after my family. They're going after everything. They're going after me personally. And he peaked out in an amazing, in a horrible, stressful situation, just trying to hold on. And it contributed to his situation. Now, I have no idea. I mean, I knew he had, well, some minor heart things, but I just pray that anybody who is following these criminals, all I ask is this: look at people's background. Look at people's background that you're following. And then if you still want to follow them with their horrible backgrounds, everybody deserves a second chance. They don't serve third, fourth, fifth, hundreds of chances. No, they don't, because that's who they are. That's who they are. That's who they are. Look at the backgrounds of the people that you're following. Look at the purpose. If you just want to be entertained like a soap opera, this has become a soap opera. You know, I understand it. But those people, and it was a group of them, those people that went after Tony with everything they had, you got what you wanted, because there were a lot of people that wished death on him. There were a lot of people that were so full of hate, that were so hateful toward him.
What's up, baby? It's Bretzky, and I'm here to tell you that SpinQuest.com is giving out free sweeps coins. All you gotta do is purchase a $10 coin pack, and guess what? They're gonna give you the coins from a $30 coin pack. That lets you play all your favorite games like Blackjack, Wanted, Dead or Wild, and we're talking real cash prizes, baby. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Anyway, I've totally digressed off of this. I'm sorry. I got the news at 3 in the morning. I was on the phone for about 40 minutes. I see it all the time with other people. Conglomeration of a bunch of pathetic criminals put their eyes on trying to hurt people that actually came into the space trying to do some good. You could say whatever you want about him. I promise you, he was trying to do good. He got nothing out of it. Nothing. He didn't get money. He didn't have a channel. Nobody paid him to come on mainstream media and talk about the case. And he and Seth were like brothers. And I just pray Seth makes it through this. All right. I'm moving on to the discussion at hand. And again, I apologize. Found out about it late last night, 3 in the morning, actually, early this morning. And so it's heavy on my heart. All right. Let's see. Number one in the bar, graduated from Georgetown. And then she began her career with local affiliates before she came on board with NBC. And NBC recognized the talent, very quickly put her as their White House correspondent, their chief legal correspondent. These are all areas within media that when you see they're the chief or, you know, have these different beats, in other words, they're outside of, you know, human interest, right? They're in the meat of difficult news to report, because not only do you need to be able to report it, you have to be able to report it with knowledge. You can't be a legal correspondent, in my view, and not have any background in the legal system, preferably being an attorney, but at least having heavy, I've never seen a former law enforcement as a legal correspondent, as an example. Heavy background educationally in the legal to work for NBC as a legal correspondent, as the White House correspondent, also political, you know, very savvy. Savannah Guthrie is probably, if you met her one-on-one, we get to see her public persona. I bet she's one of the most intelligent people that we could run across and meet. And that is very important. As I said, I'm going to circle back to it, but it's very important for seeing a lot of the steps she's done, why she's made these different decisions, you know, to reach out to the note takers, why I particularly put a lot of stock and have listened over and over and over again and have copious notes on her interview with Hoda, because I think she's a thinker and she's a communicator. And there's a reason why she gave us all the messages, all the information, all the investigative background that she gave us in that interview. That interview for us on this side, meaning you're either in the bullpen, in that squad room, investigating that case, or you're on the other side. So all of us publicly, plus all the sources, everybody else is on the other side. By the way, whether we like it or not, Chief Nanos is in the bullpen. Chief Nanos is privy to every single fact, every single trail, every single DNA, anything and everything Nanos is privy to. So I listen to him too, because I at least know he knows it. Smart woman. Also multiple awards. She's won the Emmys multiple times. This Murrah Roe, she's a New York Times best-selling author. That's hard to get. New York Times best-selling author. And I want to talk a little bit. This is when I said she's a deep thinker. The name of her book is, and it's a children's book, Princesses Wear Pants. I just love that. I love that. I swear, I think if I would have grown up with her, we would have been best friends. I say that because so many of these themes that she comes up with are themes I thought, I mean, and you, probably you all, how many times, for the women out in the audience, how many times have you thought, listen, I want to look beautiful. I want to have, you know, my hair just right. I want to have my clothes right. I want to wear what's in style. But man, I like to get dirty too. I love to just have on my blue jeans and my most comfortable sweatshirt I've had for 25 years. And I don't care what really people think or you know, I'm just going to be me. And basically the theme of this is also that no matter what you need to dress like or how you need to be for the job, that you're comfortable in your own skin. You know, you're comfortable with what you need to do. You don't always need to be dressed up like a princess because princesses wear pants. I just love this theme. And it shows so much about Savannah. I mean, what does that tell us about her? We get to see her princess side. That's all we see. For the first time, we saw the princess in pants. And that was when she came raw. Those first, at least three, the first three for sure. I think on number three, she actually had some lipstick on. And then by the last one, she looked much more put together, if you will. But we got to see this. We got to see, you know, the princess not in her princess garb. Not in a princess garb like this. So I thought it was just interesting that this Times best-selling book, probably many of us can relate to that. You know, probably many of us have, there's two sides to us as girls. Now, my daughter, she only has the princess side. Well, almost, I shouldn't say that. She's an athlete. So when she's on an athletic field, she still plays softball. When she's out there, she rolls up her sleeves. She could care what she's got, her hair in a high tight ponytail, not a stitch of makeup on. So I should give her more credit than that. She's about, and she's getting ready to, she's in her second year of law school, but she's, I'm just so proud of her. But I'm not going to digress, but I'm just saying most of us at some point, we want to be princesses, but oftentimes we know we have to put on those pants. I want to talk a little bit about what I consider and what I think would be considered her first failure, because I can't find a lot of failures. Oh my gosh, I just got to put this up. I just glanced down from Spain. Hola, ¿cómo estás? Mucho gusto que tú estás aquí con nosotros. Practicing my Spanish there a little bit. I just said, thank you for being here. Thank you for watching and thank you for being with us. But when you look at least what I see is the first I could find of any, and I use her words as what she considered a failure. And what for her was a failure was her first marriage. Many people don't even know Savannah Guthrie was married before her current marriage. She was married And his name was Mark Orchard. He worked for the BBC, which is the British Broadcasting Center. The BBC is very well respected. It's kind of like AP News. And they met following the Michael Jackson story. So she got put on that story to cover it. It was pretty much the biggest news you could find. And so during that story, they met. They fell in love. They were married. So she was married to him. It wasn't a short time. 2005 to 2009, at least I don't consider it a short time. I consider that a pretty long time. 4 years of my life, oh my gosh. Just think of what you have accomplished in 4 years. If you look back on 4 years of your life, there's a lot that likely went on from 2005 to 2009, no matter what age you are. So, as we look at that, she talked about it. It was a quiet divorce. They didn't have children, so it wasn't any major thing in the news at this point. She wasn't a star. I mean, the NBC morning show made her a star, for some a household name. For people who watch morning shows, she's the bomb. She's the bomb. So, but they got a divorce, and she described it as, quote, horrible, quote, sad. This was on an interview on Monica Lewinsky's show, July 2025. In 2026, she was interviewed with Hoda. And she tells Hoda in that interview, this isn't from that interview, but this is a photo of them together on her latest interview with Hoda. She said she was a failure. A failure. She felt like a failure in life. Now, she had had sad things happen when she lost her father. She talks a lot about that. In 2016, she lost her father. And that was absolutely horrible to her. What happened there? Just horrible. What happened? Very difficult for her as a young woman, 16 years old. But this was a personal failure, she said. Personally sad. So why do I even bring this up? I bring this up because going back to the poll I took and going back to comments I've read, people believe that the ex-husband could be involved in this. I'm serious. They say the ex-husband. And I'm here to show you he wasn't a scorned ex-husband. He broke up with her. He broke up with her. This wasn't her doing, where she, and I can also tell you, I truly believe this, and I'll be interested to see what you all think, but this was a solid family. This was a family that is super, super strong. And I would believe that Savannah had hoped, and from all I've read, from all I've seen, from everything she said, she had hoped to have a family and a life like her parents had. Her mother never remarried. They were devoutly committed to each other. Even after death, she never married. And I'm not saying that that's a right thing or a wrong thing, but I think it showed, you know, how love-based, how deep her love was, that maybe she never could find love again in that way and never remarried. But my point is that Savannah, this was a huge failure, because I'm sure she had hoped to emulate a life like her mother had showed her. And she had hoped that that would be her life, to raise a family And so divorce for some people, for many people, and you'll hear it, the three most stressful things are divorce, death, you know, loss of a loved one, and believe it or not, moving, right? Even though I look at somebody like us and we move, I don't know how many times we're at now. I remember when we were at 8 because the kids were still young, and we've moved again and again since then. So 10 times, however many times. A lot of people are accustomed to that, so it's not a huge thing. But nevertheless, I think Savannah really had hoped to have a life like her mom. And then, you know, she got divorced, and she saw that as an absolute and complete personal failure. So she rebounded from that, obviously, and she married her current husband. Now, her current husband, I want to talk a little bit about him, Michael Feldman. Michael Feldman is not a Christian. He's Jewish. And they have managed, and I know somebody else also that I know and just think the world of and work with closely. She married somebody who is actually, and I'm just going to put up some family pictures. She actually married somebody who is, and she's Jewish, the woman I'm talking about, and she married somebody who is Muslim. Talk about that. But her husband, a little bit about Michael Feldman, they managed to kind of coordinate this. I mean, Savannah is very devoutly Christian. Devoutly Christian. And so that would just be so interesting to me. I mean, for me, I always felt like I could never marry anybody. I was worried about it. Let's put it that way. I thought, and it's funny because it usually just works out that way. You typically marry people who have a similar background to you, the birds of a feather thing, right? So if you're Catholic or Christian, you end up hanging around a lot of Catholics or Christians. If you're Jewish, you end up, your circles end up being Jewish. Although I have some of the closest Jewish friends. I mean, I guess I have friends in every realm. I have a lot of friends who I call spiritual. They're agnostic. They believe in a God, but they don't have any particular God they follow. So nevertheless, I see Buster Brown saying that she's not a Christian. Well, I don't think so. I think she is. But if you have some proof, I mean, all I have is what she's written, what she said. I have her books. But maybe I'm interpreting that wrong. So if you have a different interpretation, please let me know. Or you've given me your interpretation, let me know your backing. Her husband was a Democratic political advisor. So again, very much involved in the Democratic, from a political standpoint, the Democratic side of things. And we've talked a little bit about that, how that they are very left, I would say, as opposed to in this way, politically. Because you can be completely conservative financially, you can be conservative socially. You could be liberally more politically. So nevertheless, she was married to a Democratic advisor. He worked specifically with Al Gore. He also, very interestingly, and I didn't know that this until I was preparing for this, did you all know that he was involved with Johnny Depp and Johnny Depp's legal team as an advisor, as a consultant? I thought that was really interesting for a lot of reasons. Primarily that he would be hired for that. You know, I don't know specifically his background, how he could really provide what would be necessary for being able to let Johnny Depp know how he needed to proceed, but he did start his own consulting group, and so he did start his own consulting group, and I just thought that was kind of interesting. I want to go on to, because as far as we know, and in the only picture I've seen of her out in public other than being on television was with her husband. And I posted that on Twitter that they had, they were seen together. And I'm going to do another segment on just on him, because a lot of people think he's involved. So I'll do another segment on him. And then I've still got one to do on Cameron and Cameron's wife. I think Cameron's married. I honestly don't know because I haven't done my deep dive on Cameron. So I shouldn't even say that. But I'm going to do one on Cameron, who's so private. It's going to take a lot of digging. It's going to take a lot of work. And then also on her husband. So a lot of people are saying, again, this is why we're doing this segment, that it's Savannah, that Savannah is behind this. I am trying to dispel some of the motives people have provided. One of the motives people gave, believe this or not, was related to her recent surgery that we had in January. Okay. I want to read about that surgery. So she had micro laryngeal surgery. What was happening was her vocal cords were becoming compromised, probably because she talks all the time. And she was getting a low raspy type voice. So she had this surgery, micro laryngeal surgery. And they removed vocal nodules and a hemorrhagic polyp. So a bleeding polyp. And polyps, I think, they're essentially, they're gross. And it was bleeding and causing her all sorts of problems. And in fact, she also had a ruptured blood vessel on one of her vocal cords and a callus on the other. So you have two vocal cords. So these were very compromised. To have a broken blood vessel there. I just can't imagine the bleeding she was swallowing, everything she was putting up with. And a callus, you know what a callus is like. I still have a couple of calluses from my doing pull-ups days constantly. They used to be huge, but I still have them right here. Kind of these deep calluses from doing pull-ups for decades. So she had that on her throat, and so she couldn't return, by the way, some of you may not know this, to the Today Show right after. It took a long time. She basically had physical therapy for pull-ups, or I mean, not for pull-ups, for her vocal cords. She had physical therapy to make sure she was okay to come back and be talking constantly. So it was kind of interesting it was a slow process. And then finally she was released. She was released to go back. But I just wanted to talk about that this woman, remember I said I would circle back around? This is one of the reasons they're blaming her. They think that because she had throat problems or larynx, it's not throat, it's her vocal cords, that because she had vocal cord problems, that she was worried her future was going to be compromised in her business. And she had to put together this elaborate scheme to have her mom abducted so people would feel sorry for her and she could have her place cemented on the morning show because it's so competitive. Seriously, that's what people are saying. And this is where I'm going to circle back around. A, what was wrong with her vocal cords had been fixed. The polyps removed, vessel fixed. She's fine. This wasn't something that couldn't be fixed. She's fixed. We can see it every day. Number two, She's a winner, everyone. She doesn't need to stage some sort of theatrical, horrible, murderous, violent attack on her own mother. It's so ridiculous. When I hear of these conspiracies, I heard somebody say this, and actually, if you guys don't follow her on Twitter, and I think she has a new show, can't remember the name of it, but something like Note My Objection, something like that. And then on Twitter, it's hysterical. It really is hysterical what she has to say on Twitter. She says things I would never say because I just don't speak like that per se. I'm not a big, I don't swear. Maybe on the tennis court, but I don't swear normally. I didn't grow up swearing. I didn't grow up in a household where people swore ever. So you kind of mimic what you hear all the time. And when I became an FBI agent, every FBI agent swears constantly. And I remember I started swearing more than I'd ever sworn in my life. And I'd been married for about a year and I was probably swearing. And my husband just looked at me and he goes, "That is just so unattractive. I just cannot, you know, you never swore when I met you. And now, you know, you're swearing." I've known my husband since I was 18. So I really reflected on that. And it's true. Like, law enforcement swears like sailors. They swear like the criminals that they arrest. Like, criminals swear. And I'm not putting down anybody who swears. I'm just saying I don't swear much anymore, except on the tennis court, mostly at myself. This girl, her name's Salty Steno. That's her name on, and I think she meant to be anonymous, but then came out when she was kind of figured out. But her posts are so funny. But she said something yesterday and I thought, wow, that's really brilliant. So people are going after her, you know, these counts. Anyway, and I just thought it was funny. She always comes up on my feed and she went on a rant and she said, "Bring it on." She said, "Do you think that you're my people, like the people who are going after me?" She was so funny. In your pajamas, on your last nickel of your SSI check, with nothing else to do in your life but go after people like me. She's an attorney. And she said, "Sorry, you're really not my demographic." So I just thought that was so funny. Not that we ever need to. I mean, I'm just non-judgmental. I have a sister who has had a lot of issues and certainly been on government subsistence, lived before in government housing. She works full-time now and mostly has worked, but at different times in her life, she struggled. She struggled with addiction. She's my stepsister. I've talked a lot about, and I love her deeply. But she struggled, and those programs are for people like her, people who are trying to get up on their feet, not people who are making a living off the rest of us who are making a living and paying taxes. But nevertheless, I just thought it was funny. And sometimes I feel like that with these people that would think Savannah Guthrie, one of the most successful people I've ever researched in every aspect. She's a successful author. She's a successful journalist. She got number one on the bar exam when she took it. Who does that? Savannah Guthrie. She's got a great private life from every indication. She's an amazing morning show host. The top, you would say, I think the highest ratings. And she, to me, is successful spiritually, which at the end of the day, nothing matters in this life. When I think of all the sands in the ocean, sorry, I'm really philosophical today. Our lives that we're living right now, this probably 50, 200 years. I mean, Tony Mathis died in his 50s. A friend of mine, she has a guy who worked out all the time, in amazing shape, owned his own gym, I believe she said, was working out and died of a heart attack. 50 something. I mean, she's devastated. Their whole family's devastated. Plus, he was the breadwinner. Tony Mathis was the breadwinner. They have kids. I don't know, you know, hopefully, I think they have life insurance. I think they have life insurance. I think we had a big discussion about that once. But, you know, these families that lose these young people like this. But nevertheless, she's so successful. She doesn't need to stage any sort of horrible abduction of her mother. She's always going to be successful. I want to talk about one last thing, if you please, concerning Savannah Guthrie. And this I do find interesting, everyone. I find this really interesting. And I brought it up a long time ago. Early on, if you look at my lives, if you look at my Twitter, she wrote a book, another book, besides her New York Best Time Sellers, Mostly What God Does. And then she wrote a child's version of it. But we're going to talk about an adult version. And in this book, she basically talks about, from a Christian, her very religious Christian background, it's in chapters, and it sort of talks about moments in her life and things in her life and how she feels that God intersects with that, if you will. So I'm not going to talk about all these chapters or anything, but she talks about family. She talks about, I'm going to talk about the piece that's most relevant. And the theme, the overarching theme of this book, by the way, was the exact same overarching theme. And in fact, I found one sentence that was exactly the same from her book as words that she said to the kidnapper, by the way. But the overarching theme is unconditional love for people. That people have, you know, unconditionally loved, and there's forgiveness. And that's why she goes into the exact same themes and messages from this book to the, you know, to the person who took her mom. She talks about in this book her first divorce failure, by the way. I mean, how much that was difficult. But this is the piece I want to talk about that many of us brought up, and that's the kidnapping chapter. I want to get into this because this is interesting. And we've talked about it before. She has a chapter in there where she talks about being kidnapped by her father. And when she was kidnapped by her father, he would wake her up in the middle of the night and take her to 24-hour grocery stores, take her for ice cream, and basically kidnap her, in a sense. And her point in the book is to say, listen, my father was acting kind of like God sometimes. Sometimes God, in the middle of our lives, when we least expect it, he shakes us. He gives us a shake. And he says, wake up. You're coming with me. Or wake up. You're going to listen to me. Whatever it might be. That's her theme of this particular chapter. And that's where this whole kidnapping thing it has been discussed, is that she actually was kidnapped when she was little by her father, who would kidnap her. And I got to tell you, this always, and so let me say why I think this is interesting, not because she has anything to do with this, but rather because I've always wondered how much of a deep dive did the people who took her mother, how much did they take of a deep dive? Did they read this book? Did they know this kidnapping thing? Remember, I truly believe this was not only hope to gain money and it went south. This is personal. It's ugly and it's personal what they did. Especially when you consider the two notes that came after that weren't about money. When you really look at it, they were about garnering attention. That's why they went to the two local Tucson stations, trying to reach the demographic and the people that grew up and around this family that lived there 50 years. That's who they were trying to reach. And when they couldn't get any play because those people didn't go public, they went to the FBI with the notes 12 hours later. They went to the network that has the biggest social media reach when it comes to celebrities. And I'll even argue when it comes to true crime, the biggest reach. That's their audience. People who follow TMZ get breaking news on crime. They're the ones that had the footage of Tyler Robinson in the neighborhood before any of us knew Tyler Robinson's name. They are out there in the middle of these cases. They get breaking news all the time. They're in LA. They cultivate great LA sources. Now, those sources, I believe, because they've been there entrenched forever. They're not nomadically going, nomadically following cases. They're following a culture, the celebrity culture. People get paid. People like to see their stories. I think that's a lot of some reason some people have. I think we've seen in this case political motivation, right? They want Nanos's job. So there's a lot of motivation for things that are out there. So if you take a look at this case, I just wonder how much they knew about Savannah Guthrie and the Guthries as a whole. Who is this? Who is this that has this hate for this family? Is it someone that hates Damaso? Is it someone that hates Annie? Is it someone that hates Cameron? Is Cameron going to be the missing link in this? Is it going to end up being his hater? Or was it Savannah's? Savannah's money, definitely, just as she says and as she cried. And she had Mama on stage. So she knows it. She's cried about it publicly. Her brother told her to. I think all of us see that this certainly exposed. And no blame here. I'm just reporting facts. Everyone, thank you for being here. Thank you for being here on the segment. I look forward to more segments as we don't have any breaking news in terms of how the lab is doing or how the video is doing, but we have a lot of historical stuff to look at, and I'll keep looking at it. Everybody, thank you again. Thank you to the best mods in the business. A couple things coming up, and my computer is showing me red. It's going to go out, so if I bleep out, I sincerely apologize. But I want to tell you, for everybody who is a member, and by the way, Karen, thank you for always being here. I always see you have such great things you say. Yes, this show is about Nancy Guthrie, and we're going to keep her name out there because I'll be damned on my watch if it becomes another Sebastian Rogers, where nobody cares and no one knows and no one's involved in that case anymore. We're not going to let this one go cold in the media and social media. So anyway, thank you all. I've got this cool gift basket of things personally from the FBI. This isn't from eBay or Amazon that you could buy. This is from our headquarters stores. Just a little something to give back. We're going to have a drawing. It'll be at the 6-month mark that the FBI got involved, or capturing of Porch Guy, whichever comes first, breaking the case, whichever one comes first. I just didn't want it to go on forever in case it's past my 6-month prediction, which it could be. But anyway, I just as something to give back, something very personal and important to give back to all of you who are members, who come on here every day and cut up true crime with me. We are going to have a great guest tomorrow night. The show is going to be at 10:30 again, 10:30 again tomorrow. And it's going to be with Robin Dreek, fellow FBI agent. He was in the behavioral analysis unit of the counterterrorism side of things. So kind of a different way, working more at spies than at criminals. And we love to interact. So Robin Dreek, expect him tomorrow, 10:30. Planning on a few more folks to come on. Still working on some of those bigger names I talked about, which I hope come true. Amanda Knox, Elizabeth Smart, Tim Tebow. Got to go through, it just takes a lot of time. But working on those shows, and then also, of course, other people regarding this case and other cases that we're looking at. So until next time, everybody, I really appreciate y'all. And may justice be served for the Guthrie family. Savannah didn't do it. And the rest of the true crime community.
You know what? It sucks to be bored. But when I get on my phone and play real casino games on SpinQuest.com, the time flies by. That two-hour wait at the DMV seems like 10 minutes. Play your favorite slots, live blackjack, live craps, with a live dealer. New players, $30 coin packs are on sale for 10 bucks. Play SpinQuest.com and you'll never be bored again.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.